Everybody here, I missed you for a long time back there, Jacobs there. Glad you're here. I should have remembered the hymn that I wanted to have sung. It should have been 22, but 23 was very nice. I chose the wrong one out of here at the moment. Very, very nice. The topic that we have is why chosen? You know, Jeremiah was one that was chosen in a special way, even before he was born. That's in Jeremiah 1:5. Our Lord was chosen, as Revelation 13:8 says, before the foundations of the world, you know, way back when. And if you want to read about the Lord's actual creation, you can read that in Proverbs 8:22-23, and that's before the universe was made, you see. And Paul also was a special case. Remember in Acts 9:15, the Lord says that Paul is a special chosen vessel unto him. Now, with that introduction out of mind, we'll move on further here. In our class study on the tabernacle, the question was raised, why did Jehovah God choose the tribe of Levi to be the priestly tribe through which all Israel would worship him? That was a question that was raised right here. I remember by certain ones that raised that question over there. To answer it, we reverently approached God's word and the helps that we had, you see, the volumes and reprints and so forth. And to begin with, there isn't much written on this subject, why Levi was chosen, you see. But we approached a particular book of the Bible and see that its true title, that of Genesis, means beginnings, and to see what light, the historical light, we can get on this particular question. Jacob was the sort that knew the value of birthright. He knew that one owning the birthright was chief heir to his father's estate. Esau, on the other hand, the firstborn of the twins, was quick to sell it for a mess of pottage and thus despised it. You can read about this in the 25th chapter of Genesis, verses 29 through 34. Later, Esau realized what he did, and when Esau heard the words of his father, that is after his father blessed Jacob, his father was Isaac, to bring that to your attention, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry and said, "He, Jacob, had supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he hath taken away my blessing." After which, Esau hated Jacob and planned to kill him. Genesis 24:41. Now, Jacob was directed by his father Isaac not to take a wife of the Canaanite woman as his brother had. Esau married Judith, the daughter of Beri the Hittite, and Bashemeth, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. But to go into Syria, to Bethuel, his mother's father, and to take a wife from his daughters, Now, that Laban was Rebekah's brother. And he did just that. And you know the story. Now, I'm giving you these antecedents over here so you can begin to picture in your mind here what took place here. Now, Jacob fell in love with Rachel, who was beautiful and well-favored. He happily worked 7 years for her in Laban's employ. When those 7 years were over, well, Jacob went to Laban and said, "Well, now, give me my wife," you see. And sly Laban slipped one in on Jacob over here. And on his wedding night, you recall, Laban, slipped in Leah, his older daughter, who was tender-eyed, but not beautiful and well-favored, as her younger sister was. Genesis 29:16, 17, and 26. Now, upon discovering this exchange in the morning, Jacob remonstrated with Laban over his deception. And Laban entreated Jacob to fill Leah's week, and he would give him Rachel also, for which he served 7 more years. Now, Jacob now had two wives and their concubines, Zilpah and Bilhah. And these are the antecedents now. Now, as you recall in this story, When the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Now the word hated here comes from the Hebrew sane, which means enemy, foe, odious, Strong's 8130. Strong as this definition is, it is milder than the hate of Genesis 27:41, where it was that Esau hated his brother. Hated his brother one of 41 at Strong's 7852, it defines it as an opposer, to lurk, to persecute, and in the context of the scripture, to kill. The Hebrew word here is satam, so close to satan. Note carefully, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb. Hate, other than righteous hatred, is repugnant to the Lord. Hate is from the devil. Love is from God, for God is love. This is the principle that we should have firmly set in our new creature minds. Do good to them that despitefully use you, love your enemies, and do good unto all men, especially the household of faith. Now the children came in this relationship, and you know the family was a loose sort of situation in those days. And Leah, as you recall, had Reuben, the first one, and she had Simeon, the second one. Now Levi was the third one, and she made the comment and named Levi. Now this time will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him three sons and joined. That's what joined is the name that Levi means over here. And you know, subsequently, Leah had Judah. And she had Issachar, and she had Asher. And then she had one other. What other child did she have? Bible students. All the sisters should know this. Dinah, or Dinah, if you want to use that expression. Dinah was the last of the actual children that Leah had. And you recall Zilpah had two, and Zilpah was the handmaiden of Leah, and Bilhah had two, and she was the handmaiden of Rachel, and Rachel only had two children, and that is Joseph, and his name means God has taken away my reproach, that is adding. And Benjamin was the name that Jacob gave to his last son, and as you recall, that Rachel died giving birth to Benjamin, the son of the right hand. Not much is said about Levi until Dinah, the sister of Reuben, Simeon, and so forth, stepped out to see the daughters of the land, and the land that she saw was Shalem. She attracted the attention of Sechem, the son of Hamor the Hittite, a prince, and he violated her. Sechem loved Dinah and asked his father to go get her to wife, to which his father conferred with Jacob. However, once the brothers of Dinah heard about this, they had other ideas as to how to redress this matter. They deceptively said that the men of Hamor would have to be circumcised before they would agree to intermarry and to give Dinah as a wife to the son Sechem, to which the men of Hamor agreed. And on the third day, when the men were sore, Simeon and Levi unsheathed their swords and killed all the males. After this was done, the sons of Jacob spoiled the city of Shalem, took the wives and little ones captive, and brought them into their house. Well, keep in mind, these are tough guys we're talking about over here, you see. Now, after this took place, Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, here Jacob really lays it to him. He says, ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and Perizzites, and I being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. And Simeon and Levi answered their father thusly, should they deal with our sister as with an harlot? Genesis 34:30 and 30. Now, it's rather interesting over here. You see that you're getting a situation here where you had a family that had a single father with four wives, and consequently, you know, in a family like that, things are sort of rocking and rolling a lot of times, and they're not in a stable situation. And here these sons now said that they said that this is our sister over here. Now, there were six of them that could say this. You know, Sechem, and who was the one that was killed, and the father and all the others, but Levi and Simeon, and you had Reuben, and you had Jacob, and you had Gad, and let me see, what's the other one now? I missed one here. Issachar and Zebulun. That's it. So Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Zebulun, and Issachar. These were the six. Now, they stood up and they said, well, this is our sister. We're going to handle the situation. Now, keep in mind, this is a type of righteous self-righteousness. Now, in the 46th chapter is a listing of the sons of the 12 patriarchs. The sons of Levi were listed especially now here. The Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, Genesis 46:11. These were they that went into Egypt along with their father, Israel, at Pharaoh's invitation. It appears that Joseph's brethren didn't take a good advice when they were given it by Joseph. As you recall, when Joseph was with his brethren, he told his brethren not to say that they were shepherds, but to say that they were dealers in cattle. Well, you might ask, well, why would this be such an abomination to the Egyptians? Remember that the shepherd kings took over Egypt at one time. These were shepherds. They had their flocks. They destroyed all the idols in Egypt at that time. And for a while there, they had the Lord as being the one that was worshipped. All righty. Now, keep in mind, too, that all of these said to Pharaoh, when Pharaoh questioned them, instead of saying that they were cattlemen, they said that they and their father were shepherds. Now, keep in mind that Levi was a party to this lack of reasoning. When Jacob was about to die, he blessed his sons. Simeon and Levi were given a united or the same blessing. Simeon and Levi are brethren, said Jacob. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. O my soul, come not into their secret, unto their assembly my honor. Be not united, for in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they dig down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Genesis 49, 5 and 7. They were divided in Jacob. They were both different tribes in Jacob. Now, this is a thought, see, fleshly Israel. And a hint at two Israels is perhaps suggested in the future when both Israel after the flesh and Israel after the spirit became a reality during the gospel age, Isaiah 8:14. Another approach is to consider that the division of Israel after Solomon's reign. There were the two kingdoms. These were eventually overthrown, the ten-tribe kingdom and the two-tribe kingdom. And the ten-tribe kingdom, as you recall, were carried into Assyria by Shalmaneser. And the two-tribe kingdom, Judah and Benjamin, went into captivity with Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, in 606 B.C. In 536 B.C., Cyrus, king of the Medes and Persians, allowed all of Israel that wanted to go back and to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem to return there with Ezra. Later, Artaxerxes in 454 B.C. allowed all to return with Nehemiah to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Now, all the Jews were called Israel. They had been scattered in Israel. That is, Simeon and Levi were. After the death of their father Jacob, Joseph's brethren, Levi included, thought that Joseph would avenge themselves on them, to which Joseph assured them that they had nothing to fear from him. All that happened to him was done through God's overruling. Now, here you have these various considerations being brought into mind here of these Levites, if you will. After Joseph's death, in the ensuing period of 182 years, Israel was enslaved by Pharaoh, that did not know Joseph, with rigor and under a harsh hand did they serve until they cried unto the Lord for relief. The Lord heard them and sent them a deliverer, Moses. Moses was a man from the house of Levi. Remember that. Don't forget that. His father was Amram, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi. His mother, Jochebed, was a Levite also. Moses was the youngest of the three children, Miriam, Aaron, and then Moses. Moses was almost killed at birth. Jochebed gave birth to Moses at the time Pharaoh decreed that all the male Hebrew babies be killed. His mother Jochebed, seeing that he was a goodly child, defied Pharaoh's decree for 3 months. Then she made a waterproof ark, set Moses in it, and placed it in the Nile River close to the shore in the bulrushes, or flags, where she knew Pharaoh's daughter, princess of Egypt, came down to wash. She instructed her daughter Miriam to watch and see what happened to the child. Jochebed could not bear to be there. How the Lord overruled that matter. Pharaoh's daughter came to wash, saw the ark, had it open, saw the lovely child within, called him Moses, which means taken from the water, and had Miriam get a nurse for him. This princess had a sympathetic heart. Joy must have filled Jochebed's heart when told by Miriam of Moses' lot. He was safe, no longer subject to Pharaoh's death sentence, and she would be his mother. Jochebed must have taught her son Moses well in his formative years. Although skilled in all the knowledge of Egypt under Pharaoh's direction, he never once considered himself an Egyptian, but in Hebrew, Hebrews 11:23. When Moses was a grown man, 40 years old, that he went out unto his brethren and looked on their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian smiting in Hebrew, one of his brethren, and he looked about him and saw no one. He slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, two men of the Hebrews strove together. And he said to him that did the wrong, wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, and they said, who made thee a prince and judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian. Exodus 2:11-15. He dwelt there for 40 years, married, had children, and prospered. He was about 80 years old when he was confronted by the burning bush, a bush that burned but did not consume himself. Oh, that's not a young person, you know, at 80 years old. Keep that in mind. The Lord desires certain qualities in a person that are manifested. The word manifested is key. Our actions have to demonstrate these qualities. With the Lord, it doesn't do to say you are interested. You have to manifest or show your interest through your actions. Moses did exactly this. He was interested, curious. He turned aside to see the burning bush. This is all found in Exodus 3:3. He was called. He answered the call. God called him out of the midst of the bush. 3, he was obedient. He put off, when told to put off his shoes, for the place whereon thou standest is holy, he took off his shoes. He was humble. Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. Apparently Moses passed the test because his heart was a faithful one. Now God began to reveal himself to Moses. I am the God of thy fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. The 6th verse. Second, I came down to deliver them, Israel, from their taskmasters. I know their afflictions, their sorrows, their cry because of the Egyptian taskmasters. 3, I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians. 4, I am come down to bring Israel onto the land flowing with milk and honey. And verse 9 is a repetition of the second consideration, that I've come down to deliver them from their taskmasters. After this, the Lord commissions Moses to bring forth his people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Meek Moses protests. Number 1, who am I that I should go into Pharaoh and that I should bring forth the citizens, the children of Israel out of Egypt? That's Exodus 3:11. What shall I say unto them about your name? But behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. Exodus 4:1. then he says, after the Lord gives him all the other considerations there, he says, I'm not eloquent and I'm slow of tongue. Exodus 4:10. And he said, O my Lord, I pray you, send by the hand of some other whom you will send. Moses didn't want to go. Meekness of the wrong kind predominated here in Exodus 4:13. Moses sounds like one person from Missouri, doesn't he? He's a little thick. And this caused the provocation of the Lord. But God, ever merciful to ones of the right character, solves Moses' hesitancy by asking, Is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well, and also, behold, he cometh forth to meet you, and he'll be glad in his heart. Now God tells Moses how he's going to speak to the people through Moses and Aaron. And thou shalt speak unto him, and put words in his mouth. Tell him what to say, and I'll be with him, thy mouth, and with his mouth, and thou shalt be to him instead of God. Now Jehovah spoke through his Logos to the people. Next, the Lord tells Moses to return to Egypt to do all the wonders which he had put in Moses' hand before Pharaoh. Pharaoh was Egypt, and personally represented the opposer of God, Satan. And the people, Israel and Egypt, believed that God had visited them and looked upon their afflictions and then they bowed their heads and worshipped. Exodus 4:31. The Lord sees not as a man does to see the outward appearance, but reads the heart and notes the very intents of the heart. God made the right choice. Moses did all that the Lord told him to do through the 10 plagues. Exodus 11:10. The last plague, once done, freed Israel from Egyptian bondage. This plague placed all the firstborn in Egypt and the beasts of the land in jeopardy if they did not abide under the blood of the slain Passover lamb as directed by the Lord through his servant Moses. The Lord gave Israel a new calendar introducing the last plague. It was the beginning of months, a lunar calendar based upon the moon instead of the Egyptian calendar based upon the sun. On the 10th of Ibid, Nisan, the unblemished lamb was selected, penned in the house until the 14th, then it was to be slain in the evening, between the two evenings' margin. The blood was to be sprinkled on the two doorposts and the lintel of the house of the Hebrews. The lamb was then to be roasted without a bone broken and eaten the day of deliverance, the 15th of Nisan. Those that did this were passed over, not killed. Those that didn't were killed, from the firstborn of Pharaoh's son to the humblest maid. All not covered by the blood died. This death of the firstborn throughout Egypt caused such a lament that Pharaoh and the Egyptians were urgent for the Israelites to leave. Israel left with a high hand, the hand of God leading them. Note, too, again, that Moses was a Levite. The Levites, Aaron, Miriam, had predominance in this exodus. And they took their journey from Succoth and encamped in Etham, in the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of a cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, to go by day and night. He took not away the pillar of the cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night from before the people. Exodus 13:20-22. Next came the ten temptations. The first five are of interest to us in answering our question, why did God choose the Levites? Numbers 14:22. Well, the first temptation. Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army overtook Israel as Israel encamped by the sea. Israel was sore afraid and cried out unto the Lord. And they said unto Moses, Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, Let us alone, Levi included, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, Fear not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord. The Lord shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. First temptation was after they went through those 10 plagues, you see, and this temptation was right over there immediately as they were crossing the waters. Number two, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink of the water of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of the place is called Merah. And the Lord's people murmured against Moses, saying, this included Levi, what shall we drink? And Moses cried unto the Lord. And the Lord showed him a tree, which when he had cast into the waters were made sweet. And there he proved them. Exodus 15, 22, 27. Now, all of these considerations have a wonderful antitypical significance, which we will not have time, because remember, our particular decision is to answer the question, why did God choose Levi? The third temptation. Now, the third temptation presented the whole congregation of the children of Israel, and they murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel, Levi included, said unto them, would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and when we did eat. Israel wanted flesh. They got quails. They wanted bread. The Lord rained down upon them manna, bread from heaven. The Lord told Israel how to gather it, use it when gathered, or else it would stink if they tried to keep it over. And Moses said, let no man leave of it until the morning. Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto Moses. And some had some of the manna stinking, as you recall, and so forth. And further on into this, Moses was wroth with that. And he said unto them, this that which the Lord had said, tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. 6 days ye shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there shall be no gathering, you see, of it. There won't be any of these. And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? And Moses said unto Aaron the Levite, take a pot and put an omer full of manna therein, and lay it before the Lord to be kept for your generation. And the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept. Exodus 16:34. That's an interesting verse, you know, to lay it up before the testimony. You know, the testimony always calls to mind the Ark of the Testimony and the Most Holy, right? Now, dear friends, keep in mind, when did the Levitical services begin? When was the tabernacle established? Now, all this that I'm talking about now took place within the first 4 to 5 months of Israel leaving Succoth, being at Sinai and so forth. When did the tabernacle services begin? We had that study. I think Brother Ed had that here. Well, listen hard and we'll bring it up, okay? The service was not there, but you say there's a tabernacle here. Yeah, keep that in mind, too. I think we have the answer later. The fourth temptation. And they pitched at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Wherefore, the people did chide with Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said unto them, why chide ye with me? Wherefore do ye tempt the Lord? And the people thirst for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, wherefore is this that thou hast brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children, our cattle with thirst? Israel, all of Israel, including Levi, made this. They were ready to stone Moses. And of course, the Lord provided the solution. Moses was to take his rod and to strike the rock in Horeb, and there shall come water out of it. Is the Lord, Israel, Levi included, tempted the Lord there, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Exodus 17, 1 through 7. These four temptations preceded the law given from Mount Sinai and were made within, as we said, 5 months from being freed from Egyptian bondage until they received the law on Sinai. Just before Moses went up into the Mount Sinai, he went up and was told of God not to allow the people to come up lest they should die. Remember, Moses was going to worship God there at Sinai when he brought the people there to them. And the Lord said unto Moses, go down, charge the people, and so forth. And let the priests also which come near to the Lord sanctify themselves. That's another interesting expression. Let the priests. When did the Levitical priesthood start? Okay, we'll let you think about that, all right? We have some scriptures for you to have later on, okay? And the fifth temptation, before they received their considerations, was the golden calf. Remember, this temptation occurred when Moses was with God up at Mount Sinai there for 40 days and 40 nights, you see. And while they were up there, Israel made a golden calf there and they worshipped it, you see. And the wrath of God was hot against this stiff-necked people, and he wanted to destroy them and make of Moses a great nation. Moses entreated the Lord not to destroy his people. Notice that he brought up two features of the Abrahamic covenant, the stars of the heaven and the promised land. Nothing was said of the sand of the seashore feature. Keep in mind that Moses was a Levite. Exodus 32:9-13, you see. Then the Lord turned from the evil which he had thought to do to his people. And that expression, turned from the evil that he thought to do to his people, is taken from the Amplified Old Testament, which makes it very interesting. Now, when Moses came down from the mountain, he stood in the gate of the camp, and he asked, "Who is on the Lord's side? Let them come unto me." And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together unto him, and the children of Levi did according to the word of Moses. Moses, in appealing to God, in hopes of making atonement for Israel, showed his wonderful character, and especially the sacrificial part of that character, when he said, "Lord, yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sins, and if not, blot me out of thy book, which thou hast written." Exodus 32:32. And the Lord answered Moses, "Whosoever hath sinned against me, him will I blot out of my book. But thou, Moses, hast found grace in my sight, and I know thee by name." Exodus 32:33 and Exodus 33:17. The Lord was put out, angry with Israel, and told Moses that he would no longer go up in the midst of this stiff-necked people, lest he destroy them. But he would send an angel before them who will drive out the Canaanite, Amorite, Hittite, Perizzite, Hivite, and the Jebusite from the promised land that I will give you, a land flowing of milk and honey. Now, this is Exodus 33:1-5. Now, in Exodus 33:7, now, we talked about, remember, this testimony, this tent, this tabernacle. Now, Moses used to take the expression in the King James is interesting here. I want to read that first. If you'll turn to Exodus 33:7 here. It reads thusly. And Moses took the tabernacle and pitched it. Without the camp, afar off from the camp, and called it the tabernacle of the congregation. And it came to pass that every one which sought the Lord went out into the tabernacle of the congregation, which was without the camp. Now, we already have maybe a little bit of confusion here and say, hey, what's going on here? Now, if we take Numbers, I better do that now since time is getting to be a little bit of a problem for me. If we take Numbers and we see Numbers 1:1, and the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of the congregation, on the first day of the second month, in the second month after they came out of the land of Egypt. Notice the first day of the second month. Well, that's pretty good. But in the 40th chapter of Exodus, it says, and the Lord said unto Moses, on the first day of the first month shalt thou set up the tabernacle of the tent of the congregation. Now, the first day of the first month would be the really, the end of the first year in the wilderness and the beginning of the second year is when the tabernacle was set up. And what was the beginning date that the tabernacle would be set up in? It would be sometime in the month what? Nisan, right? Or Abib. This would be the beginning of months. So you see, prior to this time, this tabernacle was not set up. Now here, I read that scripture to you about that tabernacle. Now, I'd like to read it from the Amplified Old Testament. Now, Moses used to take his own tent and pitch it outside the camp, far off from the camp, and he called it the tent of meeting of God with his people. And everyone who sought the Lord went out to that temporary tent of meeting, which was outside the camp. Exodus 33:7. This translation somewhat clarifies the King James translation, which gives it an ambiguity that we don't want. We want a little more direct, you see. After Moses came down I'm sorry. Plans for the making of the tabernacle, the garments of the Levitical priesthood, and the establishing Aaron as the high priest and his four sons, under-priests, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, as under-priests, occupy chapters 25 through 31 of Exodus and 35 through 40 of Exodus. Now, after Moses came down from the mountain, after being there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights, during which he neither ate bread nor drank water, he came down with the law. Now, this was the second time he went up, you see. And when Moses and all the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come nigh unto him. Exodus 34, 28 through 30. And when Moses called unto him, Aaron and all the rulers of the congregation returned unto him, and Moses talked unto him. In order to keep a timeline perspective in this and not to run unwarranted conclusions, we must keep in mind when the Levitical priesthood, the tabernacle arrangements, and the order of Levites became set up or operative. We mentioned those two scriptures to you. You see, Numbers 1:1 and Exodus 42. In Numbers 1:1, the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of the congregation, on the first day of the second month, and told him, bring the tribe of Levi near, and present them before Aaron the priest, that they may minister unto him. I have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel instead of all the firstborn of the children of Israel. Therefore, the Levites shall be mine. Numbers 3, 6 through 15. Now, why did God choose Levi to be the priestly tribe through which all Israel should worship him? We looked at the beginnings in Genesis and found that Levi was the son of a surreptitious union between Leah and Jacob. Levi was the third son of this union, and she thought that now, since she had him, now this time will my husband be joined unto me because I have borne three sons. This union produced six sons and a daughter, Dinah. Leah's concubine produced two more sons, while Rachel's handmaiden produced two sons, Dan and Naphtali, and Rachel bore Joseph and died giving birth to Benjamin. Now, Simeon and Levi were deceitful instigators in killing those that violated Dinah. They were self-righteous in all that they did, you see. Jacob called these killings a stink, and feared that the surrounding people would rise up and kill Jacob and his family, thus negating God's covenant with Jacob, in that I'll make of thee a great nation, and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. The Lord overruled. Jacob went to Bethel at the Lord's direction. When Joseph was born to Rachel, things calmed down quite a bit until he was 17. Then his father gave him a coat of many colors, and when Jacob demonstrated his love for Joseph more than for the others, because he was the son of his old age, Jacob was 100 years old when Joseph was born, Joseph's brethren could not speak peaceably unto him. Genesis 37:4. Levi, too, was just as culpable as others. And when they excluded Reuben and Judah, contemplated killing Joseph, Levi was right with them there contemplating this deed. And when Joseph was sold to the Midianites for 20 pieces of silver, Levi collected his share. And when his brethren told Jacob Joseph was killed by a wild beast, Levi was party to this lie. All of Joseph's brethren, Levi included, bowed down to him when the Lord exalted Joseph to be second only to Pharaoh on the throne in Egypt. And when Jacob died, the 10 brethren, Levi among them, thought that Joseph would now be vengeful. Joseph was not. In the first four temptations that took place during the 3 months it took Israel to go from Egypt to Mount Sinai, Levi was just as culpable as the other tribes, but during the fifth, which took place at the foot of Mount Sinai, probably within the fourth month since their exodus, when Moses came down from the mountain, Levi rallied to the Lord and Moses. We believe that this single event and the special leadership of the called and chosen Moses, the sons of Aaron and Levi, that the Lord chose Levi to represent him as both priests, the high priest Aaron, and the Levites, the helpers in the service. However, Paul, under the special inspiration of the Holy Spirit, writes a rather interesting statement in Hebrews 7:16. He says that Levi paid tithes while yet in the loins of Abraham, and this choice was made by God long before these events happened. So therefore, dear friends, as we studied the elections in our first volume study, we see that God decides finally what it's all about. And remember, his divine plan was purposed in Jesus Christ before the earth was made. We trust that the few comments made here might energize your minds to delve deeper into the Lord's treasury, his holy scriptures, and to see how we can know him better and to show his love wherever we go, holding the candlestick high so all may be enlightened by it. And maybe this little consideration about Levi will cause you to push a little further. And may I suggest that all these things here about the temptations and so forth have an antitypical suggestion beyond that. And perhaps in one of these days we'll talk about the antitypical realities of the ten temptations. May the Lord add his blessings.
222, first and last. Okay. Well, thank you, Brother Leonard, for that discussion on why chosen. Why chosen?
Our beloved Father in heaven, hallowed be thy most holy name. Gratefully we approach thee through thy beloved Son to thank thee for the privilege of being here with those of like precious faith in this holy place. And we do pray, dear Father, that our minds and hearts might...